Welcome to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodger-Answer, covering Morningscape for the Canucks right now, so he'll be along at noon in time for the crossover. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. I am coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. We're here. Finally, after seemingly a very long time between games, it is another Canucks playoff game day. This time, round two, game one tonight at home at Rogers Arena versus the Edmonton Oilers. 7:20 puck drop. And of course, we've got all your game day pregame coverage here on Sportsnet 650. Sat and Reach will have the pregame show. Yannick Hansen will stop by. Sat and Bick will do your intermissions. Of course, Batch and Randeep on the call, and then Sat and Bick on, and Brett Festerling, I should mention, of course, as well, on the post-game show. So keep it right here. I'm hyped. I'm excited. I can see the buzz in the city. I can feel the buzz in the city. The Canucks jerseys out there. The car flags. Shout out to Gemma Karsten-Smith. Should be a fun one tonight. And, I mean, first and foremost, I hope this series lives up to the round two hype so far, especially after that pair of games last night. Two awesome games, both going to overtime. The Rangers and the Avs pulling out the wins. A couple of, top-tier Stanley Cup contenders in the Hurricanes and the Stars. Stanley Cup favorites, anyways, falling behind in their second-round series. Carolina down 2-0. 2-0 in their series. So we can talk about, what do our normal game day preview stuff and what do the Canucks need to do to win today. But what I really want to focus on right now is what we can learn about this series, about what kind of series this is going to be right away. Before the whistle even blows, the final whistle even blows on game one. What are those early tells that we're going to see that either point in the Canucks' favor, or maybe point, maybe there were, people were right to have them as underdogs? Because I think we all know, this series needs to go a certain way for the Canucks to win. Are we going to get those early clues, those early signposts that it is going that way? Right? And I think we all know what type of series it has to be for the Canucks to win. It's got to be physical. It's got to be pretty low event. I would say it has to be mostly played at 5-on-5 because the Canucks or the Oilers' power play is just absolutely devastating and such a weapon. So do we get that kind of game tonight? Does it match the mold of a series that favors the Canucks right from the drop of the puck in game one? And I do think, game one, obviously, this is not groundbreaking stuff. Game one, important in every series. Get out to a lead, it just makes such a difference. But I think in this one in particular, in this series in particular, I think it's going to be even more crucial than normal because of exactly what I'm talking about. Can the Canucks start to make this their type of series right away? Can they start writing the correct script, the series script that they need from the opening puck drop tonight? That's number one, the number one thing that I'm going to be looking out for tonight against the Edmonton Oilers. You can text in 650-650. What are those early signs, early tells you're looking for in game one of the second round tonight? Now, I want to play something here from Halford and Brough in the morning show in just a moment. It feels like there's a bit of a phrase of the day in Vancouver, at least when we're talking about this series, and it's seed of doubt. And we'll hear from Jason Brough in just a moment talking about that. I saw Dan Riccio on Twitter saying Canucks need to plant that seed of doubt. I think that makes a ton of sense, right? Obviously, the Canucks undefeated against the Oilers in the regular season. I don't think that means a lot in terms of the talent gap between the two teams or anything like that, or that the Canucks have their number. But if you can change that from four losses in a row for the Oilers against the Canucks to five tonight, does it start to plant that seed of doubt, right? That's what I'm talking about. Does it start to build that psychological edge for the Canucks against the Oilers? So I want to play what Bruff had to say here about planting that seed of doubt, how important it could be for the Canucks, and maybe some of the things they need to do tonight to start that. Here's Bruff on the morning show.
You have to put the seed of doubt into the Oilers early in this series, because don't forget, all the pressure is on the Oilers.
Sure.
The Canucks, I know there's a lot of Canucks fans that are like, we shouldn't be seen as underdogs. Well, that's the way you're seen. So, and that's certainly how the Oilers are going into this series. That's how they went into this season. The Oilers are basically like, all right, we learned our lessons last year against Vegas in the second round after dispatching the Kings, and they're going to come into this series and say, not again, boys. Not again. But in some ways, you can take that as like, ooh, they've learned lessons. But you can also take it as, oh, wait a minute. Maybe this is what happens to them, right? Mm. Maybe this is what they, you know, the Leafs couldn't get out of the first round forever. And that started to kind of wear on them a little bit, right?
Well, I will say
there are teams that have troubles getting out of like the second and third round. We're talking about Carolina, right? Like, yep, they've been to the conference final, but you know, sometimes they're out in the second round, but it's that getting over the hump thing. And there will be that frustration. The one thing I bring up all the time about McDavid, he still never really played a huge game, a big game. And I bet that weighs on him, that he's never played in the Stanley Cup final. He's never played an Olympic gold medal game or any Olympics. You know, that's not on him, but he is getting to the age of, what is he, 27 or 28? Or like, there's pressure on these guys. And if you can put that seed of doubt into them, maybe it's Archer Seelovs in goal, assuming he starts tonight. They're sure, like, who is this kid? Like, is this, we don't have any, like, we don't have much data on this kid. Like, now he's frustrating us. This is very frustrating. But there has to be some way that the Canucks get in the Oilers' collective heads. Maybe Evander Kane says something that tears the team apart. Hopefully, I don't know. But that's how the Canucks are going to win this series.
So first of all, I will say, you know, solidarity to Mike Halford. I've been in that spot where you're trying to get a word in edgewise and your co-host just goes right along making his point. I completely understand. We've all been there. So I have been in Mike Halford's shoes there. But I think Bruff, to be fair, was making a good point there, right? And again, we've talked so much about the underdog narrative, but that can be a positive. That can be a huge positive for the Canucks. As Bruff lays out, the Edmonton team has way more pressure than the Canucks do going into this series. They should be feeling way more pressure. It's easy to look at this and say, hey, we're heavy favorites. This has to be the time where we make that run to the Stanley Cup final that we haven't been able to do yet. That's a tough position to be in. That makes it, I think that in a lot of ways, that makes you more open to frustration setting in. And, you know, Bruff touched on a couple of things that the Canucks can do to potentially speed up that frustration, because I really think that's going to be a key. We, you know, seed of doubt, playing their type of series, all of that. I think another way to put it is frustrate the Oilers. Frustrate them in every possible way that you can. And there's a lot of different ways to accomplish that. An obvious one is in goal. And Bruff references Archer Seelovs, right? Is there anything more frustrating in hockey than getting goalied? Fans know it. It's excruciating to watch your team scoring chance after scoring chance, shot after shot, saved by a goalie. You know what's even more frustrating is when it's an unheralded goalie doing it, when it's not a superstar, when it's not Connor Hellebuck or Andrei Vasilevskiy, when it's a guy who was playing in Abbotsford not that long ago. And that's not just frustrating for fans, that's frustrating for players. So Archer Seelovs, I mean, again, this is not groundbreaking analysis. The Canucks need good goaltending in this series if they're going to win. Of course they do. But I think more than that, just in general, what an impact it could have if Archer Seelovs comes out and goalies the Oilers tonight, steals a game, steals game one, to, as Bruff says, as Dan Riccio says on Twitter, plant that seed of doubt. Immediately begin frustrating the Edmonton Oilers. And I think another wrinkle to this, as we talk about, you know, getting goalied potentially and how frustrating that can be by an unheralded goaltender, no less, you know, the Oilers have already lost a couple of times to Casey DeSmith this year, right? And so has that seed of doubt already been planted a little bit that they can't even say like, ah, hey, Thatcher Demko's getting us? They've been snake bit or the Canucks goalies have gotten the best of the Oilers, no matter who's been in the crease so far this year. Keep that trend going. Make it seem like a real trend. Make the Oilers think, man, it doesn't matter who's in goal for them. They're saving everything we're throwing at them. If Shelovs can do that tonight, and if that starts early, if there's a big save in game one, you get somebody looking to the heavens, you get somebody frustrated, that's the kind of thing that can develop throughout the course of the series and potentially tilt it in the Canucks forward. Dylan from Sparwood's on the same page. He says, I would say some massive saves from Shelovs will be an early tell on how the game is usually going to go. Yeah, and it's huge for game one. I think it's huge for the rest of the series as well. Getting those monster saves, those big performances from Archer Shelovs, if it gives you any psychological edge, those are the edges that the Canucks need to find if they're going to knock off the Oilers in this series. Another one I'm looking for right away tonight, and there's a few different ways to frame this one or spin this one, is what kind of reffing do we get in this series? What kind of physical series is this? How physical will it be? How much will the refs let slip? Because as you know, typically early in a playoff series, the refs have a pretty tight whistle, right? They'll call a lot. They try to kind of set that tone, police the players early in the series. And then as it gets into game 5, 6, 7, they're a lot more lenient. That's probably the script we're going to see. But I think the Canucks need to be the aggressor. They need to be the very, very physical team. Try to find out where that line is. And look, it's a balancing act for the Canucks, because you have to do that. You have to try to get under the Oilers' skin without just turning it into a parade to the penalty box, without giving McDavid and co. chance after chance on the power play. That's difficult to do, but you can't let that fear of the Oilers' power play make you shy away from engaging, make you shy away from playing on the edge. Because again, as we talk about what can you do to frustrate the Oilers, make this a rock fight like it was against Nashville. Make this a tough, physical, exacting series. Exact a price for the Oilers over every inch of the ice. And the Canucks have players who are capable of doing that. We all saw what Nikita Zadorov did. Dakota Joshua, he can make guys pay that price on the forecheck. Tyler Myers and Carson Soucy, they don't have that same mean streak as Nikita Zadorov, but those are big physical customers who can do the work down low, who can punish guys at the front of the net. And again, I think that's got to start right away. Game one, period one, shift one for the Canucks is dictate what type of series this is going to be for the Oilers. Make it as unpleasant and physically painful as possible. And I'm not saying that's because the Oilers are soft or anything like that. That's not what I'm trying to say. But I think the Canucks want to play that type of series, and I don't know if Edmonton does want to. I think Edmonton would be far, far more comfortable in a relatively, high-flying, fast-paced, offensively-oriented series. The Canucks can't let them dictate the tempo. Way easier said than done. Connor McDavid's really, really good at dictating the pace of games. Leon Draisaitl's really good at dictating the pace of games. The Canucks need to find a way to make this as physically tough, as physically as demanding as possible. And look, this is an Oilers team that can lose their composure. You go back to some of the regular season wins the Canucks had over Edmonton in the regular season, they got under their skin. They made them lose their composure in those games. Now, granted, the context there is Edmonton's season was spiraling apart in those early wins, but the performances against the Canucks were a big part of that. The Canucks helped make their season spiral apart, fall apart, come apart at the seams early in the year. The Canucks had a role in doing that, and part of it was making the Oilers lose their composure, especially that last one at Rogers Arena in November. When, Woodcraft wasn't fired right after it, but he was fired shortly after that. And that team just fell apart. They absolutely fell apart, the Oilers, in that game at Rogers Arena. There are combustible elements on this Oilers team, right? Evander Kane, Corey Perry, Leon Draisaitl can get frustrated. Part of it has to come from Archer Shelovs, but I think another part of it has to be the Canucks doing absolutely everything they can to physically punish the Oilers without being undisciplined, and some of that after whistle play as well, right? We're talking about Nikita Zadorov. We're talking about Dakota Joshua. How about Nils Höglander? This is a guy who's still looking for what his go-to role, go-to identity is going to be in the playoffs for this Canucks team. Yes, they desperately need him to step up and start scoring goals as well, but I think he just needs to find something that he can hang his hat on right now, and that can be as a pest. maybe it should be as a pest. Fine line to walk, and it can be a tough balancing act in the playoffs, even for veteran players, right? To stay on the right side of the line and not let it slip into being undisciplined. But Nils Höglander has that element. Can he get under the skin of Evander Kane? Can he prompt that lack of composure from the Edmonton Oilers? That could be a huge, huge key in this series. And again, if you do it in game one, you have a chance to start writing the narrative of this series. You have a chance to be the aggressors, to be the ones that are forcing the Oilers to react to what you're doing. And I think that's going to be absolutely critical for the Canucks tonight to do that, to set that tone early. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. You can get your thoughts in. What are those kind of early tells, early signs of what type of series this is going to be that you're looking for, that you're watching for in game one? Jesse in a Jeep says, and I think this is a really good one, scoring first. I think not playing from behind early is going to be huge. That's Jesse in a Jeep. 100% agree. The Canucks are so much more comfortable as a team playing with the lead. And I think especially when you're going up against Edmonton, I think it's always going to be in the back of your head, how many goals do we need to score tonight, right? Are we going to need to score 4 or 5 goals to get the win because they're such a high-powered offensive team? And you have to resist the temptation to, you know, try to hit home runs every shift just because you're worried about what they might put up. But that becomes even so much more tempting if you fall behind early, right? Then you're pressing. Then you're already behind the eight ball and you feel like, okay, we really have to sell out for offense. And I think if the Canucks fall into that trap, it's just going to feed what Edmonton wants to do. If they get those early goals, that's the best way for them to facilitate playing Canucks hockey. That's the best way for them to facilitate dictating what type of series it's going to be. Is the Canucks playing with the lead, still being aggressive? I'm not saying sit back. They're not a trap team or anything like that, but just be in a position where they can comfortably play Canucks hockey with the lead. I think that was key against the Oilers in their season series this year. I think that's going to be key in this playoff series as well. It's a good shout from Jesse in a Jeep. Another one, slowing, he says, McTurbo Diesel, McDavid, down in the neutral zone. I think that's a good call. Man, talk about tall orders. Talk about tough assignments. Hey, guys, the only key is slow McDavid down through the neutral zone. You're not wrong, but boy, if there was a magic bullet for that, McDavid's career would look very different because it is really, really hard to slow him down in the neutral zone. But having said that, and you know, I was making the point on the show yesterday, it's not just defensive zone staples, defensive zone predictability that the Canucks need to have, defensive zone structure. It's in the offensive zone. It's through the neutral zone as well. They have to be on point with their play in the neutral zone, not to give McDavid those extra inches of ice that he can turn into a goal in just a couple of seconds. It's tough. It takes all five guys working together, being in the right spot, having the right mentality, skating forward, doing all of those things. It can be very, very difficult, but this is a team where you need to be absolutely on point in the neutral zone because otherwise McDavid can punish you in an absolute hurry. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your thoughts in. What are those early looks, early signs that you're hoping to see from the Vancouver Canucks, or even just wondering, okay, what will we see in this regard? What are we going to learn right off the drop about what type of series this is going to be tonight? Keep those thoughts coming in. This one, I couldn't agree more with your emphasis on physical play. McDavid is hard to catch, but if Miller, Zadorov, Joshua can get some licks in, it changes the game. The key is targeting their stars, for hits. Hitting and parrying Kane does nothing. Look to punish their top tier, and it will drive them nuts. Playoffs are great. So obviously, yeah, you need to extract that physical toll on their top players. I would disagree a little bit with hitting Perry and Kane does nothing, because especially Evander Kane, like, that's a guy who can lose his cool. If you can tick him off and he does something stupid, he does something goofy, and you get on a power play, that could be a turning point in the game. So yes, the number one, the people you want to annoy the most are Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, but I think it's a total team thing too. Get as many people off their game as you can early in this series, early in game one, and it's got a chance to pay dividends down the road in this series. Brandon in Vancouver says, I want to see our forecheck create havoc and torture their D-men down low. That's our bread and butter. That's from Brandon in Vancouver. I think that's a good call. The forecheck didn't have as much success as we're used to seeing it have in the Nashville series. If you look at the defensive pairs for Edmonton, you know, obviously Bouchard can move the puck. Matthias Ekholm, I'm a big fan of Matthias Ekholm's game. So against that pairing, going to be a little bit tougher to have success. Against Darnell Nurse and Cody Ceci, that's an area where you got to exploit some of the puck moving limitations. You got to exploit some of the in zone limitations, but the first step is getting the forecheck home, causing those turnovers, setting up below the goal line, setting up those heavy cycle shifts that can expose some of the weaknesses from Nurse and Ceci. Same thing for the third pair with the Oilers. That's probably going to be the Canucks' best option to generate offense in this series is against those bottom two pairings, get the puck deep, get the forecheck home, and as I said, generate those cycle shifts that can find the cracks in the defense, that can find those high-quality shots that Rick Tocchet really wants to see from this team. Marcus and Gibson's says, I think Zadorov is our best potential for a pest. He also needs to stay out of the box. And he also says Zadorov laying a big hit or two can set the tone early. And Zadorov, the thing about Zadorov is you don't have to worry about his mentality at all. You know he understands how he can impact this series. We saw it against the Predators. He knows exactly what he can do to dictate the physical nature of the series. The only job for Zadorov is going to be to make sure, as he did incredibly well against Nashville, is that he stays on the right side of the line, that he comes right up to the edge without going over it, without costing the team. I think he's capable of it, but that's just a tough task, especially against a really, really good team and a really good player like Connor McDavid. I'll throw another one out here, and I can't believe it hasn't come up, but in terms of early tells, Elias Pettersson. Like, this guy has to be a factor in this series. He really wasn't. He was an afterthought. Not from, you know, us watching it perspective against Nashville, but from Nashville's perspective, he was an afterthought in that series. Andrew Burnett did not have to worry himself about Elias Pettersson. He didn't have to change up the matchups. He didn't have to devote any time, any resources to trying to figure out or limit Elias Pettersson. That just can't be the case. He has to play a role in this series. He has to force the Oilers to make some tough matchup decisions, right? Force Chris Knobloch to worry about Elias Pettersson, to be scared of Elias Pettersson when he's on the ice. Don't let it be just, yeah, we'll send the third line. We'll send Ryan McLeod out there, and yeah, it'll probably work out. Because that's what Nashville did with Colton Sisson's line. Canucks were still able to get the win, but I don't think they're going to be able to get the win if that continues for Elias Pettersson in this series. And again, that's the kind of thing that I think has to start right away. Force the Oilers as soon as possible to account for Elias Pettersson in some way. Now, maybe they say, okay, look, we're going to just hang on for dear life with Ryan McLeod, even if Elias Pettersson's playing really well and having all these great shifts. But if that's the case, then you got to punish them on the scoreboard. You cannot let the Oilers successfully punt on an Elias Pettersson matchup and think you're going to come out on top in this series. And I think we'll tell right away, there's not a lot of time to ramp up here. Game one is hugely important. If we see vintage Elias Pettersson tonight, that's the type of thing that can completely force Edmonton to go back to the drawing board. Okay, we're going to have to make some new decisions on how we're matching up. We're going to have to do some things we didn't want to do. And again, we're talking about early signs that could pay dividends later in the series. Man, seeing vintage Elias Pettersson, again, groundbreaking analysis here, but that would be a big, big deal for the Vancouver Canucks. Okay, tons of texts coming in. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep those thoughts coming in. What are those early signs you're looking to see in game one tonight against the Oilers? I'll keep reading them throughout the show. Again, Drance will be by at noon. Up next, my guy, Bick Nizar from intermission, post-game coverage here, and of course the People Show as well on Sportsnet 650. I'll put the question to him as well. Coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Bick Nizar. Have your say and join me on the People Show with big takes and even bigger bets weekdays 3 to 4 on Sportsnet 650 or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd here. Drancer will be joining me at noon. We'll do the crossover. Jason Bukala will join us at 1. And, of course, lots more preview of Game 1 between the Canucks and the Oilers, which gets going tonight. Round 2, Game 1, 7:20 puck drop. Of course, you can hear full coverage here on Sportsnet 650. I am live from the Kintech studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber, with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver, online at dunbarlumber.com. And after ducking our calls initially, we do have on the line from the People Show here on Sportsnet 650 and the intermission and postgame coverage as well. He is Bick Nazar. What's going on, man?
Yeah, I knew I wasn't going to live that one down because I was chatting with you.
You were literally texting me, and then Dom's like, "Bick's not answering his phone." I'm like, "What are you doing? Come on!"
I don't have a good explanation for you. Usually, I can BS my way out of a problem, but the phone was under a pillow, and I didn't hear it.
Okay, sure. All right. So I started off the show kind of talking about, look, we all know game ones are important. I feel like it's kind of especially important in this series, right? And all those cliches of, you know, setting the tone and dictating the pace. I think those are actually absolutely vital for the Canucks. And I was kind of going through some of the, you know, the early tells about what kind of series this is going to be that I'm curious to see, that I'm going to be looking for. I mean, they can be positive from a Canucks perspective or negative, but I do think we can learn a lot, at least about, you know, what's the series is going to look like from the early stages of tonight. What are you kind of most curious to see, to learn about this series tonight in Game 1?
Yeah, I think Shelov is going to be the big one, right? Like, I'm a big believer in Archer Shelov and wanted to see him start Game 2 when the situation arose. But, like, this is a different animal. And in particular, like, Shelov's, like, 5-on-5, I think he'll be fine. But going up against the Oilers' power play, as much as we've talked about, like, the overall penalty kill as a whole for Vancouver, having to be strong, and obviously they were good in the last series, but, you know, of the remaining 8 teams from the regular season, they had the worst penalty kill right now. That element of what Shelov does on the penalty kill with having to face Draisaitl, like, just being aware of Draisaitl on the goal line, and here's McDavid skating all over the place. Like, that element is something I'm going to be keeping an eye on certainly early on, is when the Oilers on the power play and they can do all these things. How does Shelov react? Because he's so calm. Like,
yeah.
That's what's so amazing is that's what's going to translate to the most tense moments in the series, that he's just like, oh, yeah, don't worry about it. I'm cool. Like, I get that this power play can operate at 50% in a 7-game sample, but I'm fine back here.
Yeah, and I think you're right about his performance on the penalty kill specifically, but you could also easily say, well, like, the number one thing the Canucks have to do against the Oilers' power play is not give them power plays, right? And I do think, you know, finding that line early in the series for the Canucks where they can be physical, they can be aggressive, they can be the ones trying to frustrate the Oilers without taking a ton of power plays, that's going to be absolutely crucial for them, right? To come right up to that edge without going over. I'm very curious to see how this series is reffed tonight, but I think that's another one that I'm looking for. You know, you got to get under their skin, you got to be physical, but you can't let that turn into undisciplined play either.
How realistic do you think that is, by the way? Of like,
what?
Oh, don't take penalties.
Well, you got to try. Because, like, you're going to take penalties.
Of course.
You're going to take penalties,
right,
but you got to limit it.
Let's just assume this goes 7 games, okay? I'll use Ian Cole's philosophy of you assume every series goes 7 games. So let's just assume that it goes 7 games. How many power plays do you think the Oilers are getting?
Like 14, 15?
I think it's way more, man. I think it might be 20. Like,
yeah.
The Canucks just took, what, 22 in a 6-game series against Nashville?
Yeah.
So
I'm saying, like, what you need to keep it to, though, right? And you also kind of got to hope that if it is, does go 6 or 7, that there's, like, a one power play game in there for them. You know, but by that time,
ideally,
the whistles are going away, right?
Ideally. Like, I said the same things of, like, oh, they really have to limit the power play and don't take penalties. It's a great ideal. But, like, this is a team that might take a lot of penalties. How many times do we talk about stupid stick penalties? Like, it's kind of part of their DNA at times. They were the 10th most or 9th most penalized team during the regular season. They didn't really slow that down during the playoffs. They put themselves in tough spots against Nashville. And it is an element. Now, blending the physicality with discipline, because I know that's always going to be a big talking point. How does Zadorov show up? How does someone like Joshua show up? And even someone like Tyler Myers, if you're talking about early tells, like I sneakily can't tell if Tyler Myers is going to have a great series or a terrible series. And part of me really believes that he might have a great series, right? Like he's played his best in the playoffs, like full credit to him. Not even just this past round, but even in the bubble, like there were moments that Tyler Myers was important in that bubble, going up against Alex Tuch. And now the size of him and Soucy, and it's one of the things I was discussing on the show yesterday, like the size of Myers and Soucy versus the mobility and puck dominance of Hughes Hironic, which one do you put out there against McDavid? And there's merits to both sides, but you know that physicality that guys like Tyler Myers might bring too is a huge early tell for me in this series.
Well, yeah, just it comes down to mentality for Tyler Myers, right? Like he's obviously so big, so strong that he has that ability to throw his weight around and play on the edge. Mm-hmm. We don't always see it, and again, I think with Tyler Myers kind of perfectly encapsulates it because he is so penalty prone at times, and because he's so big, the refs seem to be paying extra attention to his infractions sometimes, right? Amping up that physical game without just like leaning into the worst parts of your game, which is, you know, taking a ton of penalties from time to time. You know, you mentioned the debate about, or at least the question, the decision about, you know, which defense pair gets out there the most against Connor McDavid. And whether it's McDavid, but just in general, I think Quinn Hughes is going to need to play a ton in this series, right? Because I understand the argument for, okay, get Zadorov out there, try to take some of that physical toll on Connor McDavid, and I'm sure we will see that at times. But the other thing you need to do is keep the puck away from him, right? Like, the other thing you need to do is possess the puck, and far and away, the best player at allowing his team to possess the puck for the Canucks is Quinn Hughes. And he didn't play what I expected to see him play in the Nashville series. You know, his numbers weren't really up from the regular season. I think that's going to have to change against the Oilers.
Well, what happened during the regular season, look, I know we're talking a lot of that out, obviously, but Hronik and Hughes played the most against Connor McDavid, 5-on-5. It was 27 minutes for Hronik, 24 minutes for Quinn Hughes, so it's, they were 7 minutes ahead of Tyler Myers, who was the next closest. And the last series, to me, the one that was going to be the most interesting 5-on-5 was going to be Hughes versus Josi. As much as we talked about, you know, forwards going against D-man, I wanted to see what Hughes was going to do against Josi, because who's going to battle that puck, right? They both are so puck dominant, and it's interesting to see that interplay. And obviously, they played close to 50 minutes against each other, 5-on-5. It was the most, of course, for them. But that of, like, because Hughes can't really influence Josi having the puck because he's not going to be forechecking on him, and vice versa. But now there's a direct comparable of, hey, like, this is the forward I have to go take the puck away from, and how can we do that? And that element, if I'm Rick Tocchet and if I'm the entire coaching staff, I'm putting Quinn Hughes out there for that exact reason of, in the defensive zone, when Quinn Hughes gets the puck, it's usually a zone exit. And that element of plus the mobility, to me, is the reason I want to start with Hughes and Hronik out there versus McDavid.
Yeah, and it's a zone exit with control, right? Like, that's the key. Mm-hmm. It's not just off the glass and out, and the Oilers have a chance to reload, and McDavid can circle and try again. It's, okay, we're going the other way. We're putting them on the back foot now. And yeah, I completely agree that Quinn Hughes is going to have to play that role against Connor McDavid. And, you know, I would expect to see JT Miller as the forward matched up with Connor McDavid. Typically, when the Canucks have had Hughes and Miller out together, it's been very, very successful for them. It becomes a lot more difficult to make that the case if it's those two guys up against McDavid's line. But like they might have to win that battle, right? Because if you're devoting the resources of JT Miller and Quinn Hughes to slowing down McDavid, like, those are also your offensive drivers. You know what I mean? So they kind of are going to have to find a way to create offense while also playing that matchup role against Connor McDavid.
It's going to be dicey, right? Like, doing the strength versus strength. Because I actually prefer Lindholm versus Draisaitl. Because unless we're talking about the speed, the force of Draisaitl, I think I want to throw Lindholm at that. Like, he's uber competitive. He's as much as everyone is, but like that, the little details in Lindholm's game, I think, will pair well as at least attempting to go up against Leon Draisaitl. He's a phenomenal player. He'll get his moments, of course. But that element of Lindholm versus Draisaitl is maybe the edge I'm trying to find, rather than Lindholm versus McDavid.
Well, and I just think JT Miller's been Tocchet's first-choice matchup guy, right? And now we haven't seen them play McDavid since Lindholm's been in the lineup, right? Because, of course, that last game, McDavid wasn't there. But I think Rick Tocchet has always looked at JT Miller as the first-choice matchup guy, right? And I like, I think that has to continue going into this one, and that obviously would put him against Connor McDavid. Elias Pettersson, I was talking a little bit about him, and you know, as much as, hey, it's a seven-game series, and you know, maybe we started to see some steps forward, some steps in the right direction from him in late in the Nashville series, certainly based on where he was early in that series. Like, I kind of feel like it almost needs to be instant for Elias Pettersson tonight against the Edmonton Oilers. That might be unrealistic, but they just can't. I don't know that they can survive if they're getting 2, 3, 4 games in this series of really subpar Elias Pettersson play. And, you know, the point I was making, like, you have to factor into Edmonton's game plan in a way that I don't think he did at all for Nashville. Like, I don't think they were concerned at all about Elias Pettersson in their game plan. It's really hard to see the Canucks winning if he doesn't change that in a hurry starting tonight from an Edmonton perspective.
At bare minimum, it has to come on the power play. Like, at bare minimum, Elias Pettersson needs to become a threat on the power play. It's not as if the Oilers had this, you know, barn burner PK either. Mm. They were 0.4% better than the Canucks in the regular season. They were 79.5. It was league average, but it's not an overwhelming number. But at bare minimum, Elias Pettersson has to have an impact on the power play. Because you want to match them as much as you can on special teams. The Canucks power play has to show up in a big way. And 5-on-5, I have less concerns about the Canucks overall just because of the depth of the Oilers, and they have similar issues, right? But I think we're so focused on the Canucks' PK and how you're going to slow down the power play of Edmonton, you got to be threatening with your own PK. It's or your own power play. It's not as if the Canucks don't have talent on there. And everyone's looking at Elias Pettersson to produce 5-on-5. It's, we've talked about the line mates, we talked about what all these things that he can do. There are elements where I think it suppresses his offensive output, 5-on-5, but there's no excuses on the power play. Quinn Hughes is there, JT Miller is there, I want to see Lindholm out there full-time, and also Brock Besser. Like, you have people to take the attention away from you, and when it's not taken away, you still have to create for others. So Elias Pettersson on the power play, for me, he has to have a big series at 5-on-4.
Yeah, and somebody made a good point in the inbox earlier in the show saying, you know, the Canucks have to get results on the power play, right, to keep the Oilers honest. And I think that's a good point because we're talking about, you know, the Canucks being the physical aggressors and getting under the skin of the Oilers. But, I mean, they have agitators too, right? They have Corey Perry. They have Evander Kane. They have, you know, Darnell Nurse who can play physical and take liberties in the defensive zone. So you do need your power play. I don't want to say keep pace with the Oilers because that's, you know, maybe an unrealistic expectation, but it's got to be a threat. It's got to keep the Oilers honest to some degree. And, you know, in general, we've talked so much about how they need to score more than they did against Nashville. Part of that has to come from the power play. What were you seeing from the power play? I mean, we all saw how much they struggled just to get set up. I think it was in game 5 in particular. They had the one really nice performance in game 3 with JT Miller and Brock Besser scoring goals. But, like, from your perspective, yeah, Pettersson needs to be better. What needs to change? What needs to improve on the power play?
Indecision and zone entries. And they kind of go paired together, but when they were at their worst in round 1, like, the zone entries were painful, and you're limiting your own opportunity to try to create in zone. And the at times, like, JT Miller was a culprit of this on the zone entries, where he would get it and throw a cross-ice pass along the blue line just on the inside, and it got picked off a bunch and cleared away by Nashville. And there may have even been odd man rush opportunities for Nashville if they turn those into more dynamic play. But the zone entries just looked lazy and out of ideas. And then in zone, like, we all spoke about moments of Pettersson passing to Pichot and trying to be too cute and all this sort of stuff. I think, like, that sort of stuff really stood out. And actually, something I'm going to talk about in the show later, like, I want to see a lot of face-offs. I want to see a ton of face-offs because I think that is an edge the Canucks might have on the Oilers. And in zone, like, we saw some really nice set plays from the Canucks against the Flames. Yeah. And if that's something they can lean on, and even in power play, like, start shooting for Stuart Skinner's glove side just to create in-zone face-offs and worry less about the entries that way. And if you can create something out of that, that to me would be a big step too, because the indecision part really stood out to me in moments, again, like the Pettersson slap pass, trying to get it to the back post and stuff like that. If you're coming off a face-off, and look, this is pie in the sky stuff, but if you can win face-offs and create something where it's like, we know exactly what we're doing coming out of it, and we just got to go execute it, that sort of stuff, I think they can find some edges there.
Yeah, that's an interesting point about the set plays off the faceoffs, and we did see those work against Nashville from time to time. And, you know, just in general, the Canucks in the offensive zone, look, it's so easy to focus on, okay, hey, they have to play tight defensively against McDavid, and you got to be sharp in the neutral zone and not let him build up that head of steam. But I do think it kind of starts in the offensive zone in a lot of ways, right? And Rick Tocchet's referenced it this week. Hey, don't take bad shots that miss the net and end up turning almost into, you know, easy zone exits for the Oilers. And as you were saying, like, hey, maybe you're even aiming at the glove, trying to get those in-zone faceoffs. We know they love the layered screens, the tips, the shots from the point, all of that. What does kind of the winning formula in the offensive zone for the Canucks look like in this series to you?
I think the same thing for what we saw versus Nashville. Like, there are elements of what Nashville wants to do is similar to what Edmonton wants to do, right? Like, they want to skate. They've got the world's best skater. Why not get him out on the rush? And the difficulty I had, and I said it along with you, and I said it throughout the course of the shows, create from down low. Like, where did all the goals come from Vancouver against Nashville? They came from down low. So give yourself an opportunity to attach to McDavid early, because he's got to come back deep now. And obviously you want to create your offense from there, but just to help yourself out defensively, make him go the full distance, recognize where he is early. And I thought LA did a terrible job attaching themselves to McDavid throughout the course of the series and just letting him build up speed. That's something, you know, I see people have texted in quite a bit of, hey, the Canucks got to get back to their forecheck. Well, some of that starts too with your offense creation down low as well. So that to me is, they're all paired together. And for me, like, creating offense has to come from hash marks down for the Canucks. And I struggled a lot with that, seeing that from Vancouver in the opening round, because it was exactly what we were talking about, those layered tips and screens, which are effective and can produce offense. But for me, it looked like it was always a struggle. And when they were creating down low, that's when their best opportunities came up, because guys would start to cheat it, especially against Nashville. They were always ready to just get out of the zone. And guys are cheating, even on the Lindholm goal, the game five winner. It's like, there's Forsberg on a bad rotation. And it's not as if these Oilers are their defensive group leaves a lot to be desired, right? I'm a big fan of Ekholm, big fan of Brett Kulak, but the other four, like, I feel you can put them into a turnstile and get them switching, get them trying to play with their backs to the goal and below the line. See how that works out and force them to make tough decisions.
Yeah, to your point, like, three of the game-winning goals for the Canucks in the Nashville series, right? Joshua, game one, Lindholm in game four, and then Pugh Suter in game six, like, plays from below the goal line, quick-hitting plays to the front of the net from below the goal line. And I think we're going to need to see more of that. You're going to have to exploit that. And I'm with Rick Tocchet. Like, be patient. If you're cycling, waiting for that opportunity, that's fine. Don't feel like you need to, you know, feed it back up to the point and take that shot that's just going to deflect to the corner and be a loose puck for Edmonton to pounce on. Bick, appreciate this, man. Thanks for doing this. Thank you for answering your phone. You got anything to plug on the People Show coming up later?
We got Jack Michaels coming up. More thoughts on the series as well. And for all the people texting, I have the inbox open. Is my phone connection stuck here or something like that?
I mean, it sounds like a normal phone connection. I don't know.
Oh, okay. I'm using my headphones. So
yeah.
All the people ripping me about using the speakerphone.
It sounds.
I'm not one of the people that holds the phone to the front of my mouth while using a speakerphone.
It sounds like a totally normal phone connection to me. So don't worry. You're off the hook. Anyways, we'll listen later, man. See ya.
See you later.
That is Bick Nizar from The People Show, and of course, post-game and intermission coverage here on Sportsnet 650, weighing in on what he wants to see, what he's looking to see, what he's curious about early in this series and early in Game 1 tonight at Rogers Arena. It is Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Mr. Do or Die, great handle, by the way, text in, speaking of planting the seed, I believe getting in Skinner's head can or will determine the series. This coupled with the Canucks' counterattack, which wasn't as deadly in the first round as in the regular season. That's from Mr. Do or Die, as I mentioned. And I thought it was a really interesting note from Kevin Woodley yesterday when he was on with myself and Drance talking about Skinner's vulnerability off the rush. And it kind of ties those two things together, right? That Mr. Do or Die is talking about, because the Canucks don't generate a lot off the rush, but they can be effective when they get those chances. And so there's kind of two things you're watching for when it comes to the counterattack, when it comes to the rush opportunities for the Canucks. Can they get just, you know, the bare minimum of them, right, to put that pressure on Stuart Skinner, and can they punish him when they get them? It ties into another text that we've had in a lot today, right? Can they play with the lead? Well, if you get one of those, you know, maybe deflating rush goals, maybe a little bit against the run of play, we're talking about frustration, we're talking about building that seed of doubt, that's a vulnerability for Stuart Skinner, right? That's something that's probably going to be more successful than tip shots from the point, layered screens from the point, given the size of Stuart Skinner. So can you take advantage of the rush opportunities that you do get and also find a way to just generate a few more rush chances than the Canucks normally do in order to put yourself in a position to really expose Stuart Skinner like that? The text just says, look, hey, Bick's connection got a little bit better as the interview went on. I thought it was just fine. Sometimes the phone doesn't sound that great. Omar, an East fan, says, early signs I'll be looking for is once Edmonton scores or some other major event happens, such as many dangerous scoring chances in a row, I'd like to see how the Canucks keep their nerve and resist getting shook. That's from Omar, an East fan. And that's a good point, right? We've been talking a lot about, okay, the positive things the Canucks need to do and, you know, playing with the lead, dictating the pace, dictating the tempo, all of those things. But at some point in this series, things are going to go against you, right? You're gonna concede a goal. You're going to take a penalty you don't agree with, and Edmonton's going to go on the power play and torch you. That's going to happen. You're going to be pinned in your own zone for a few shifts in a row, right? That's just the ebb and flow of a playoff series against a really good team like the Oilers. You're not going to avoid that. How do you respond? Do you get right back to Canucks hockey, or do you let it throw it off your game? I think we saw in game two against the Preds, they started pressing, right? They started making uncharacteristic plays as they were trailing in that game. And that, and as a result, they never really gave themselves a good chance to get back in that game. They pressed a lot, but they didn't get close to getting back in that game. Can you avoid those same sorts of long, long lapses against the Oilers? Because again, it's not going to be a perfect series. You can have the game plan and you can have the script in your head that you want to see, that you want to follow, that you think is going to give you success, that's great. But look, Edmonton has a big part to play in this as well. They're going to throw some counterpunches. They're going to throw some haymakers at you. What do you do in response? I think that's a really good shout from Omar in East Van. 650, Saskatchewan Joe says, hi, Jamie, I must have missed your round two predictions. What did you say about the Oiler Canucks series? Well, we haven't made official predictions yet here on the show, Saskatchewan Joe. We'll see. Maybe Drance and I decide to do that a little later on in the show today. But you haven't missed it. We just have not made official predictions for this series. And I guess I can't really make predictions now for the other ones. Although I'll still pick the Panthers to come back and win, even though they're down. All right, we'll take a break. Drance is standing by. We'll get him involved. And then, of course, the crossover with our pals Donnie and Dolly. That's next. Really looking forward to that one coming up here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.